Zena, I'll always love you.
Welcome everyone to Zena and Uber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We are now up to episode number 6. I want to thank everybody for sending me some emails with suggestions as to the stories. I'll look into those. Also, want to thank those people who have sent an email in for voting of the theme song. I even got a suggestion as to changing the song around each time I do a podcast, which that in itself is quite creative, but as you can imagine, quite time-consuming trying to search out new songs each time. But I'll take that in consideration and on board, and hopefully we'll choose someone or choose a song. So here's keeping our fingers crossed on that. As you can hear, my voice is a little bit froggy this week. I'm still trying to get over a little bit of a flu cold that I've got going on. But I figured that maybe, hey, it'll sound a little bit sexier for those of you who would like to hear one of those 1-900 telephone operators calling. Hi, this is Zena and Ubers. So anyway, I'll get off that soapbox for a while. God, the medicine's really making me weird. But anyway, we're on to chapter number 11 of the Zena and Ubers podcast. Or episode number 6, I think, and chapter 11 of The Conqueror series by the late L.J. Moss. So without further medicine-induced psychosis that I'm going through right now, we'll continue on. When last we left off, Zena and Gabrielle were relaxing in their bed whilst Gabrielle brushed Zena's hair after they had taken a bath. Gabrielle had related, at the request of Zena, a story, and Zena found it quite related to the life that she was leading with Gabrielle at the moment. Zena left Gabrielle to go get some food and had told Gabrielle to go get dressed and went on down to the kitchens where she encountered Delia, who was cooking. And being in a good mood, she thought about giving Gabrielle her riding station that she had seen over at Delia's corner of her kitchen. So she asked Delia to go ahead and arrange for that. So on her way back upstairs, she found Gabrielle in the hallway being manhandled by a lieutenant in her army. And she got enraged and pretty much pummeled this guy, broke his jaw and his nose, and threw him down the stairs, where Captain Atreus and a bunch of the other soldiers had come along and encountered them. She then released her anger onto Gabrielle, stating why she had not protected herself. And Atreus just gave Gabrielle the tray of food that Zena had brought up and said, look, she's probably more upset with herself than anything for having screamed at you, and she doesn't know how to deal with that. So just take the tray in and go on in. While Zena was sitting in a chair inside the room, Gabrielle came in, put the tray of food down, and went about, got a bowl of water, and cleaned up Zena's hand, which was pretty much beat up and cut up from the pummeling on that soldier. And that's when Zena found out that Gabrielle didn't know how to defend herself. She'd never been taught. And Zena told her, look, you know, you belong to me. You know, I don't own you, in those words, but she said, you belong to me, and anything that belongs to me, I want to keep it. So with that, I give you permission to defend yourself. So with that, she also taught her how to defend herself, gave her first basic lesson on defending herself. So they decided to give it a trial run out in the soldiers' compounds, and that was quite positive. The next morning, Zena prepared to meet with her advisors and sent Gabrielle to go get dressed, knowing the surprise that awaited her in her room. Gabrielle returned, and she was overwhelmed by the riding station, and for the first time, or actually basically the second time, she looked directly into Zena's eyes. And it was a powerful moment for Zena. Gabrielle then fulfilled Xena's dream of one day touching her because she simply wanted to, not because she was commanded to do so. And boy, oh boy, did she touch her. So that's where we left off, and now on to Chapter 11 of the Conqueror series by the late L.J. Moss. Chapter 11, Little Lamb, Who Made Thee? What did you spend your afternoon doing, little one? I asked Gabrielle as we took our evening meal together. It was a fortnight ago that my young slave turned a corner in her life. It was evident in the way Gabrielle talked, walked, and even held herself. I'm sure she didn't even notice the changes that were taking place, but my eyes took it all in. She smiled a lot more, and sometimes, I think she even forgot it was me she was chatting to. She told me of her day, and I sat there, an elbow leaning on the table, my chin resting within the palm of my hand, somehow fascinated by every damn word the girl uttered. Gabrielle's newfound confidence put many of my fears at ease. I no longer worried quite as much when she was away from me, knowing that she now possessed enough attitude to keep her slightly out of harm's way. Her days, it seems, were spent filling the scrolls I purchased for her. I know she spent every day with Delia, and once I even saw her laughing with my maid Scylla on the way to the market. As ruler, my own time was not my own very often. But when I did take time away from the business of running the lands in my care, I spent that time with this young woman. Occasionally, I gave permission for Gabrielle to come down to the practice fields to watch as I worked out. For some reason, unknown to me, she enjoyed sitting atop of one of the low stone walls that surrounded the sparring area, watching as I exchanged blows with a variety of weapons against my soldiers. I rarely allowed the young woman to be there, yet she never pleaded to come. She simply smiled and nodded enthusiastically when I asked if she would like to join me. I admit there were two reasons for my hesitation in bringing my slave down there. The obvious was my concern with a pretty girl being in sight of my men, especially my pretty girl. I've lived with or around soldiers nearly all my life, and on the whole, they're a pretty loudish bunch. I didn't see the need to put Gabrielle through any undue humiliation, nor did I desire to put myself in the position where I would be compelled to kill a man for a leer or a whistle. I knew how jealous I could become, and how unreasonable my temper could be. Why play with fire? The second reason was more of a personal problem on my part. It was, very simply speaking, disconcerting to see Gabrielle watching with rapt fascination as I practiced and demonstrated my fighting skills against young men barely half my age. In the heart of this very large woman, this conqueror, there resided a mass of insecurities, especially when it came to Gabrielle. The truth is, I was never quite certain as to whether the young woman wished to watch me or the young men I pummeled. "Wait, back up. Who is Anya?" I asked. I had the unnerving ability, to some, to let my mind wander, but still hear everything going on around me. Gabrielle moved to the bed in the middle of our conversation, and when I looked up again, she had her legs drawn up into a casual position against her chest, her back leaning against the carved wooden headboard. She was telling me of a woman she was becoming friends with, yet I knew no one in the castle by that name. "She's Petra's mother, my lord. Remember the boy you—" "Oh, yes, yes. She's well, then?" I asked, remembering how frail and ill she looked when Kuros led me to the rooms within the palace that he appointed for the woman and her children.
"Very well, my lord. She's teaching me how to sew and create the most amazing things with cloth. Do you know she was an apprentice to a famous seamstress in Athens before she married?"
"Indeed," I answered seriously, indulging my slave. "And who was this famous seamstress?"
"Messalina," Gabrielle said with some excitement.
I sat up in my chair a little straighter. "She studied this craft under Messalina?" I asked.
"Yes, my lord. Do you know of this famous woman?"
"Yes," I answered distractedly, remembering a time when the woman known only as Messalina designed all the silk robes I wore. I looked up and Gabrielle was watching me patiently, perhaps waiting for me to explain. Since I already answered in the affirmative, how could I not explain myself? "When I was much younger woman, before you were even born, I first became known as Xena the Conqueror. I conquered all of Greece, the Roman Empire, the Far East, Gaul, and set up my palace here, in Corinth. Messalina was perhaps the age you are now, but even then—" I shook my head and smiled. "She was truly gifted." I paused and took a sip of water, remembering the young woman in the heavy brocades she created for me to wear in public,
reminiscent of the flowing robes I became accustomed to wearing from my time back in Qin. Back then, the land influenced everything in my life. Too bad I didn't study the principles more. I had only to describe my preferences to her once, and soon after, the girl literally created the style of clothing I would wear for the next 20 seasons. She designed all the clothing I wore then. There wasn't much kindness in me then, but I remember being kind to her. I think I admired her talent. She was like Delia, though not quite as forward about it. She never thought twice about telling me when my clothing designs were outlandishly tasteless or downright ugly. The way she looked at me sometimes, it's the same way you look at me, I let a small bittersweet smile cross my lips at the memory. Did you love her? Gabrielle's soft questioning voice cut through my reminiscing. I looked up at her and I saw something in her eye that wasn't there yesterday. It looked a bit like jealousy, but when I blinked, it was replaced with the same expression of compassion Gabrielle always held when she gazed at me. Gabrielle was young, too young to know more about me than what legend told, but it was time she knew what I was. I rose from my chair and crossed the room to sit beside the young woman, seated on the large bed. Taking one of her small hands in my own much larger one, I began to speak. There was no love in me or for me back then, Gabrielle. I killed and I raped and I took, all for one reason, and that's because I could, because I was strong and others were weak. My life was about power and control, because I thought that whoever had it had everything. I lowered my head as I continued speaking, and my dark hair surrounded me like a hood of a cloak, making it easier to share the awful truth of my existence to the young woman before me. The things I've done, Gabrielle, what I have been, it sickens me, and I know now that really no amount of good that I can do that can possibly atone for my acts. It's true what they say about me, you know. Perhaps you shouldn't be nice to me, Gabrielle. I am evil. I wasn't looking for pity or even compassion, although I believe I received both from my young slave. I simply told her, in the fewest words possible, who I was. I wondered at my actions. In those long heartbeats between the time my voice ended and Gabrielle's next movement, a quick bit of introspection caused me to ask myself, why, just when I've drawn her closer, am I trying to push her away? Why am I trying to frighten her out of caring for me? I could only hope that someday I would find the answers to those questions. I felt the smoothness of Gabrielle's fingertips under my chin, and as I've done with her 100 times, I felt my face tilted up until I was looking into an expression that could surely melt even the hardest of hearts. I have read many things, my lord, about this woman, Xena the Conqueror. The scrolls are filled with her history, her stories of war, as well as her proclivities. I know I'm young, but I understand more than you think. I know of Xena the Conqueror, but I do not know her. That Xena is not the woman before me, and she is certainly not the Xena to whom I belong. I'm not sure why I did it, only that it seemed natural to do. I lay my head down in her lap, stretching the length of my body out on the mattress, one arm wrapped tightly around her waist. Gabrielle rubbed my back in small, soothing circles. It was that insecurity-ridden woman that spoke next. Do you belong to me, Gabrielle? My eyes were closed tight against the respectful silence I was sure I would hear. Why couldn't I leave well enough alone? Why did I have to push the issue? I felt silky tresses surround me as Gabrielle placed a feather-like kiss upon my ear. I tried to hold back, without success, the heart tears that leaked from the corners of my closed eyes. Yes, my lord. Only you. Gabrielle's warm breath responded in my ear. I wrapped both arms around her waist and squeezed. My heart couldn't decide whether it would be grateful or terrified. It decided to choose both. It felt so right to be lying here with Gabrielle this way, not worrying about whether I should be in control of my emotions, not caring how it might look to anyone else. It also felt very natural allowing someone. No, not just someone. It felt very natural allowing Gabrielle to care for me. As ruler and warrior, I was never allowed to look weak or foolish, but in Gabrielle's presence, I'm positive I looked both, but sure, to her anyway, that I appeared neither. I felt a heavy comforter being pulled over me, and the soft warmth presence of another, wrapping their arms tightly around my shoulders. I moaned and pushed into the embrace further. A loud rapping on the outer door to my chambers interrupted my pleasant state. I growled, knowing I would have to leave this comfortable sanctuary. "Shall I, my lord?" Gabrielle asked. I murmured. "Get rid of whoever it is, please, Gabrielle. I don't want to see anyone till morning." I rolled onto my back, immediately missing the soft body that silently rose from the bed. If I had been more awake, I might not have thought it merely a pleasant dream, when smooth lips were pressed delicately against my forehead before moving away. A male voice in my outer room instantly brought me awake. Gods, I slept so soundly when I was beside Gabrielle. It frightened me. I suddenly remembered that only moments ago I asked Gabrielle to enter the door. I rolled to the end of the bed, standing and grumbling under my breath once I discovered the male voice belonged to the scum Dimitri. The exchange between Gabrielle and my headman was muffled, but suddenly their voices became clear as they moved directly in front of the door to my bedchamber. I sat back down on the mattress, listening to more than a surprising exchange.
"Move aside, slave, or I'll move you myself," Dimitri growled.
I silently swore to myself that if the man laid a single hand on her, a slow crucifixion would be too good for an end for him. "I cannot, Lord Dimitri." Gabrielle's voice suddenly came closer, and I realized she must have stepped in front of the door to block the man's way.
"You little bitch. You know if I have to move you out of the way, you won't be happy about it,"
Dimitri hissed. I practically applauded Gabrielle's next words, even though every muscle in my body was poised to intervene should things get out of hand. "Lord Dimitri, the Lord Conqueror has given me orders that she is not to be disturbed. If her wishes are not obeyed, then I will be punished for certain, but I expect worse will befall the person who actually does the disturbing." I almost laughed out loud. I could just imagine what Gabrielle looked like, delivering those words filled with caution and innuendo. Her brazenness surprised me more and more every day, and my mind's eye conjured up a vision of the tiniest smirk on her lips, along with that ever so slight arch to her eyebrow. Gods, this woman was not an idiot. I walked to the door and heard only silence as Dimitri obviously contemplated the words, conquer and disturbing, and weighing his chances. I grinned to myself and then fixed a fierce scowl into my face. I grabbed the door and pulled it open so swiftly that Gabrielle, who was leaning her back up against the heavy wood, flew into my arms. The small blonde was surprised and momentarily lost until she realized it was I behind her. The look on my face caused Dimitri to take full 2 steps backward. I held Gabrielle's back against me snugly with one arm wrapped around her waist. Dimitri looked rather relieved and opened his mouth to speak.
"Lord Conqueror, I..." "Good night, Dimitri!"
I slammed the door in his face, leaving him standing there, stammering, for a few heartbeats. Eventually, footsteps walked away and the outer door to my room slammed shut.
"Oh, that was worth the price of admission," I laughed, falling back against the door and wrapping Gabrielle in my arms, kissing the top of her blonde head.
"Was it all right to do that?" Gabrielle asked, her cheek pressed against my chest.
"That was very all right, little one. I'm very pleased," I replied, and I could feel the tension leave the young woman's body.
I moved to open the door and peer out into the room before deeming it safe to enter. I crossed the room and grabbed up a flask of wine, pouring a large cup. I stopped and lifted the container in Gabrielle's direction.
"Gabrielle, have you ever tasted wine?"
"No, my lord,"
she answered, as I expected, for few masters would ever give good drink to a slave. It would be considered a waste.
"Would you like to try some?" I asked.
"I'm not sure, my lord, if it would please you," she answered.
"The point is, would it please you?" I responded, and we seemed to be at an impasse. We both stood there, seemingly unable to release one another from a tender gaze. I pulled away first and poured a small bit of the red liquid into a heavy metal cup, then added a good deal of water. I figured that, never having tasted the brew before, along with her slight build, watering the drink down would be the best way to initiate my young slave to the grape. I handed Gabrielle the cup and waited until she took a sip first. Her nose crinkled up and she smiled slightly.
"Sweet," she commented. "It's like juice, in a way."
I lifted my own cup to my lips, but stopped short. I paused momentarily and raised the cup a bit further in salute. "I drink a toast to you, Gabrielle. You have pleased me greatly today." Her blonde head lowered slightly. Is it because of what I did with Lord Dimitri? Is that why you're pleased, my lord?
I took a large swallow of my wine, then another before entering. Setting my cup on the sidebar I leaned against, I pushed off and walked toward the open window, the stars shimmering and suspended in the black sky. I wanted to say so much, yet, as always in my life, words deserted me when I needed them most. I made an attempt to say what was in my heart, but I was still so far from being able to put a voice to all that I felt there. I guess I just like knowing that you can take care of yourself, I said with my back still facing her, realizing how weak that sounded.
I am a slave, my lord. I'm not sure everyone will accept aggression coming from me.
I turned to look at her, and I noted her furrowed brow. Gabrielle, there is an enormous difference between being aggressive and being assertive. I don't see you as becoming an aggressive woman. It just doesn't seem to be in you. I looked across the room and paused, but Gabrielle looked just as confused as before. Gabrielle, if I taught you to use a weapon, if you were able to become skilled with it, would you use it to kill?
I don't know if I could ever do that, my lord, Gabrielle answered, disappointment evident in her voice.
And I wouldn't expect you to be able to. Like I said, it's not in you. But you might defend yourself with this weapon, mightn't you?
Yes, perhaps, she responded hesitantly. Yes, I think I could protect myself or someone I cared for.
Then you have just learned the difference between aggression and assertion. If the first were true about you, you would be able to attack someone. If it is the latter, well, being assertive means defending oneself, little one. That's what I want you to learn to do. It will help me not to worry so much when you're away from me, I answered, but as the word slipped off my tongue, I realized what I said and how easily I said it. Did I actually just admit that I worried about her? Me? Xena the Conqueror? I could feel my ears growing hotter, and that's never a good thing for a warrior. I watched as the crease in my slave's brow eased, and suddenly I saw something that could only be described as mirth enter Gabrielle's forest green eyes. I folded my arms across my chest, shifting my weight to one foot as I tried to appear casual. When Gabrielle took a few steps forward, her facial muscles quite obviously straining to hold back a smile, I turned slightly and began examining the hanging tapestry on the wall. Mind you, that tapestry has hung on the wall for nearly 12 seasons, but suddenly, it became the most fascinating object in the room.
My lord, you worry about me?
Gabrielle said. I must admit, way too merrily for me. Gods, I think it may have been a colossal mistake giving this woman power. Well, I paused, still fingering the tapestry, knowing that if I made eye contact with the small blonde, I was done for. I knew that if I allowed myself to be caught in the gaze that filled with a combination of compassion and seduction, I would fall on my knees and promise her anything. I would end up flat on my back in some sort of submissive posture, allowing my young slave to take me as if our stations in life were reversed. I would do the one thing I swore to myself I would never do again. I would beg. Gabrielle would use her talented body and my own weakness to take control, and I would end up begging for her divine touch like a pup begs for her dinner scraps, whining and whimpering my need until my master would take pity and satisfy me.
Is it true? Do you worry for me?
Gabrielle paused momentarily. All right, I won't look at her. I will not give in, I continued to think to myself, unconsciously pulling threads from the priceless piece of heavy fabric. I can be strong. I can be articulate. I'm the conqueror of practically the whole god-be-damned world.
Xena?
Gabrielle finished. And then I looked. Hades! I fell into the eyes which displayed a temperament and an attitude that I helped put there. My heart stopped as my libido soared, and I realized that I created this. Somewhere along the line, I took a small, frightened lamb and turned her into a ravenous wolf.
Do you, Xena?
Gabrielle repeated the question, tilting her head slightly in the most charming manner. She stopped in front of me, her body so close we were almost pressed against one another. Sometimes. Gods, how pathetic. I froze as I watched her capture my attention with no more than a commanding look. Gabrielle smiled at me. not the feral grin I expected from such a capable huntress, but an innocent smile, laced with sweetness, the kind that can capture an old warrior's heart, and within a candle mark, have her begging for mercy. My young slave raised herself up on her toes, sliding her body along my own. She reached up and almost shyly placed the most gentle of all kisses on my cheek. It was so light and delicate, it felt like the beat of a butterfly's wings against my flesh skin. I felt those ears that grew warm earlier, burning like flames now. I could do no more than look down on her, a sheepish expression on my face. Gabrielle slipped one small hand within my own and began to walk towards a bedchamber. As she drew me through the door, I suddenly remembered a phrase I read. It was something to the effect of, "Be careful what you wish for." Chapter 12, Mistress Mine. I lowered myself into the steaming bathwater, wincing at the stinging sensation the hot water caused on the tender flesh between my legs. I squirmed a bit, trying to find a comfortable position, since the scratches raked across my backside were smarting from the water, too. God, this girl is simply going to be the death of me. It was indeed a pleasurable pain, as the indelible grin on my face indicated. I lay there in the warm water, replaying the previous evening's event in my mind, and a small shiver took my body. There was no mistaking that tremble. It was caused by the mere memory of our lovemaking last night. The grin became wider. I cracked open one eye at the sound of movement from the other room. Scylla entered the bathing chamber, bending down repeatedly to pick up the path of discarded clothes from the tiled floor. "I see that your Gabrielle is still asleep," Scylla commented. I raised an eyebrow, yet my eyes remained shut. "And? How do you know that?"
"Because that girl is as neat as a pin. I've always suspected she was trailing after you, leaving you to your own devices, and it looks like a barrack full of soldiers live here," my maid grumbled good-naturedly.
I opened my eyes, and I couldn't stop the deep laugh that issued forth. "Scylla, if I wasn't such a slob, whatever would you do for a living?"
"Very true, Lord Conqueror, very true," she admitted, continuing to collect my laundry, placing it into a basket.
I settled back into the water, closing my eyes once more. I could sense that my maid stopped and stood, waiting at the entrance to the room. I cracked that one eye open again in question, only to see Scylla silently chuckling at me.
"What?"
I asked as innocently as I could muster.
"Forgive me, Lord Conqueror, but might I suggest that people would know less about what you do in the privacy of your own bedchambers if you tried taming that smile down a bit?" Scylla said, a mischievous grin falling across her own features.
I grabbed the sponge and feigned throwing it at the younger woman.
"Out!"
I bellowed, chuckling as she slipped through the double doors, pulling them closed behind her. She was right, though, and I realized that I must look like a clumsy schoolboy again, grinning like an idiot. I tried, but all I could do to force it down was a maddening smirk. My eyes drifted closed once more, and it was a few moments before I heard the doors open again.
"Gods, woman! Did you come back to hear it from my own lips?"
"Yes, I got laid last night,"
I said in exasperation to my maid.
"Actually, I do somewhat already know that, my lord."
Gabrielle's soft, teasing voice came at me. I jerked forward to a sitting position and turned my head to see Gabrielle standing at the head of the tub. She wore only her robe, but her hair was already brushed and pulled back from her face. I have never blushed in embarrassment, shame, or modesty, but at this very moment I could feel my skin turning absolutely scarlet.
I thought you were Scylla," I responded weakly.
"I see. I came in to see if you care for me to rub your back. Perhaps wash your hair."
"Yes, please,"
I answered, thankful that she wasn't rubbing salt into the wound of my humiliation.
"I'd like that."
My beautiful young slave proceeded to wash my hair, and then she carefully lathered a sponge, preparing to scrub my back. When Gabrielle tenderly brushed my hair over one shoulder, I heard a small gasp.
"Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me, my lord," she said with some concern.
I turned my head and followed her eyes to my shoulders and the light scratches there. Then I looked up to witness the expression of fear. No, it looked literally like horror in Gabrielle's eyes.
"Gabrielle, little one, it's all right."
I turned around and took the sponge from her grasp, grabbing her hand and stroking the top of it with my thumb.
It took a few heartbeats for her to look into my eyes with her own hesitant gaze. "I wear my battle scars with pride, especially these," I winked, returning the sponge to her hands, and turning my back to her once more. I knew my jest put her at ease, once I felt her hands on my skin. We chatted about nothing in particular for a spell until I was finally able to entice Gabrielle into the bath. By the time I gave her the same treatment she just graced me with, she turned and began to massage my neck and shoulders, carefully avoiding the scratches. It felt incredible, and the muscles that I hadn't used in seasons screamed out in relief.
"My lord."
"Hmm?"
"Remember when I spoke to you about Petra's mother, Anya? I was wondering, my lord."
My senses were now on alert, but I willed the rest of my body not to betray me. I had the oddest feeling that I was being set up for something. Now, being the target of feminine wiles was not necessarily a new thing to me, but being on the receiving end, with Gabrielle as the conniver, well, that was certainly different. I smiled to myself and silently cheered the girl on. "Come on, little one, let's see what you've got."
"Yes? What were you wondering, Gabrielle?"
"Well, she still isn't completely healed from her recent illness, and she has 3 small children. Petra would help more, but he is a palace messenger, and..."
"How is the boy doing, by the way?" I interrupted. I could see where this was going now. Gabrielle became friends with the boy's mother, and was making a petition to keep them in the castle. Rather transparent, but Gabrielle probably didn't have much experience in strategy and subterfuge.
"Oh, Petra, he is fine and healthy, my lord. He is a good worker, and become a favorite messenger of all in the castle. Captain Atreus says Petra has makings of a fine soldier, perhaps even an officer."
Gabrielle continued my massage as she spoke, but one of her tidbits caught my attention, more so than the others. "When did Atreus say this?" I questioned innocently. When, in Hades, had Gabrielle been speaking with the captain of my army?
"Yesterday, my lord. I spoke with him when he came to Anya's room."
Gabrielle's voice froze in mid-syllable. I felt her entire body freeze, and when I turned to look into the girl's face, her hand went up to the mouth that still hung open in surprise. She immediately lowered her eyes from my gaze, a heavy silence hanging in the air between us. "Gabrielle..." I paused, but my slave refused to raise her head. "Gabrielle, are you hiding something from me?"
"Yes, my lord,"
she answered in defeat.
"I've done nothing wrong, I swear, my lord, but I promise that I..."
Again she clamped her mouth shut, but by this time I figured it out. One of the reasons why slaves, especially the master's body slave, had few, if any, friends was for this simple reason. Slaves are not allowed to keep secrets. Any person, indentured or not, knew that if they confided in the master's slaves, their secret would soon be made known. As whenever I thought back on a life my young slave has endured, my heart opened up and I felt an agonizing pain envelop my chest. I reached over and tilted the chin, watching the muscles in her jaw clench as she willed herself not to shed the tears that brimmed her eyes. "Little one, have you made a promise to someone to keep a confidence?" I asked knowingly. She uncharacteristically nodded her head, seeming unable to answer. I couldn't help but smile gently. "Then we can't have you breaking your promises, can we? After all, how would that look, the woman that belongs to me, breaking her word? I think it might reflect poorly on me, don't you agree?" I responded tenderly, always prudent enough not to say, "my slave." When Gabrielle finally raised her eyes to meet my own, I saw her brighten as she noticed what I'd hoped she'd see there. Gods, I wonder if she knows yet that I would refuse her nothing.
"Thank you, my lord."
Gabrielle threw her arms around my neck, pressing our bodies together. My own arms found their way around her easily, eyes closing in soft delight at the soft way she felt against me. My eyes snapped open when I felt her lips on my neck, tongue and teeth suddenly nibbling on a sensitive earlobe.
"Oh, no you don't," I laughed,
pushing her an arm's length from my body. That intensity of an inferno was once again blazing in those emerald eyes, and I realized the small blonde was in the mood to thank me, as only she could do. She looked at me with a coy expression, and I laughed even harder,
Pulling her against me once more, I whispered into her ear, "If I let you take me like you did last night, I won't be able to sit in a saddle for a week." Then I kissed the edge of a small ear, only to feel a strong embrace from the slight woman. When I reached in to tease the ear with another delicate kiss, Gabrielle's lilting laughter rang out, completely filling my senses. I'm not yet sure why, but her laughter acted as more of an aphrodisiac on my body than her teasing kisses. For a brief moment, I almost said to Hades with riding. Nothing seemed more important to me than being with Gabrielle. It was an extremely great sacrifice, and with some incredible effort that I pushed the girl away, all the while screaming in my head, "By the gods, take me, woman." "Out, now," I laughed again, at what looked like a pout situated on Gabrielle's face. It was definitely true. This girl was going to be the death of me. I finished dressing, at last pulling on my boots, while Gabrielle sat in her robe at our dining table, pouring a hot mug of tea for the both of us. We conversed a little over our morning meal. I told Gabrielle what my day held, and she explained that Anya would be giving her another sewing lesson. I completely forgot about the beginnings of our earlier conversation. I was gulping down the rest of my tea, preparing to strap my sword into place on my hip when Gabrielle's words filtered through.
"This will probably be the last time Anya will be able to instruct me, for a while at least. The work she does is hard, and with her still recovering from her illness, I don't want to take up her time."
"What work does she do here?" I asked, falling right into the trap without even realizing it was set for me.
"She works in the palace laundry, my lord," Gabrielle answered. Her face never even hinted at the fact that I was being manipulated.
"What?" I turned around to face Gabrielle. "Do you mean to tell me that the woman who apprenticed under Miss Alina is working in my laundry? That's insane!" I shouted.
"Perhaps you know something she would be better suited to, my lord," Gabrielle innocently asked.
"I should say so. She'd be a lot better use as my seamstress than my laundress," I replied.
"Excellent suggestion, my lord."
Gabrielle smiled up at me. I froze. What else could I do once I realized that I'd just been played like Terpsichore's lyre? Hera's tits, this girl is good. I turned my back on her and walked across the room, stopping in front of a heavy marble table that I used to play King's Men on. It only came up to my knees, and that wasn't very large. It was square, with a geometric pattern inlaid on the top. It took 3 men to carry the thing in here, but I rarely had anyone to play against anymore. "Gabrielle, come here," I ordered, and the young girl was instantly at my side. Without even looking at her, I gave a little defeated sigh and continued. "Gabrielle, have you ever played King's Men before?" I asked, picking up playing pieces. They were all carved from pieces of jade in a variety of shapes. Warriors, centaurs, and horses. They were divided into 2 equal sets, one in green jade and the other in lavender. I casually examined the pieces in my hand, at last looking down into my slave's confused face.
"No, my lord," she answered.
"Tonight I will begin teaching you all the moves. Then we will advance to the nuances of the game. I have the oddest feeling, little one, that you will excel at it." I returned the piece to the table and stared down at the young woman, a smirk situated on my face.
"Why do you have that feeling, my lord?"
"Because," I lowered my voice, leaning down until our noses were nearly touching, "it involves cunning and strategy. Both skills I believe you possess in abundance." Saying that, I covered the remaining distance and kissed the top of the girl's nose. I grinned down at her, and Gabrielle lowered her head to hide her smile. I tilted her head back up with the assistance of 2 fingers under her chin. We gazed into one another's eyes, and I wanted Gabrielle to know that she may have beaten me this time, but I knew I'd been played. Even as I searched those lush green eyes, I believe Gabrielle understood that I knew also. I reached over and kissed the top of that blonde head. "Gabrielle, you have indeed become a worthy adversary." Thank the gods, the girl at least had the decency to look up at me with an expression of chagrin. I leaned upon the stone wall of the corridor, listening to the sounds of their laughter behind the wooden door across from me. I could have let it go, but I easily figured out the secret Gabrielle was keeping, and even though it involved a trusted friend, I didn't want anyone in my palace thinking they could be entirely free of my eyes. So I waited patiently outside of Anya's rooms, waiting for the right moment. Anya's daughters were becoming the darlings of the palace, to be sure. I think children have always been my weakness. Well, that and small blondes, I thought with a smile. Over the years, I have allowed children a liberty around me that few others have ever been granted. I chuckled softly under my breath as I remembered what happened earlier this morning. After having left Gabrielle in my rooms, I made my way to the great public chamber within the palace. I have come to detest this place and vow that I will make more of an effort this season to change the way things look. It is a large hall where the public gathers to see me preside over matters of the realm. The only reason I detest the place is that it was fashioned at a time when I was rather full of myself. Everything was set up to give me the air of a mighty ruler. After 20-some seasons as conqueror, I have learned that looks are the last thing to make a ruler powerful. Ah, why does it take ages to learn these lessons? The hall was created with a raised platform, upon which an ornately carved throne sat. In the previous seasons, I enjoyed the image this created. However, on my 40th birthday, I had the monstrosity of a chair hauled out and burned. I ordered one of my more comfortable chairs from my private chambers to be installed, nowhere near the die, I might add, and I held court from there. It was more informal and less intimidating to the uneducated villagers who often traveled great distances to bring a petition to my attention. Nowadays it wasn't unusual to see children racing about or hiding behind their mother's skirts. Perhaps that's why Anya's two girls slipped past the guard so easily. Dimitri, my headman, who I was watching carefully these days, was droning on and on in regard to some petition regarding a group of slaves who mutinied aboard a vessel bound from Amphipolis to Corinth. There was an outcry from some that the slaves were free citizens captured illegally. Knowing of Dimitri's involvement here in Corinth with these unlawful traders, it didn't surprise me when he was the one to speak for the ship owners from my home city. My headman's eyes suddenly went wide, and I was pulled from my current musings as to why I made it illegal to kill idiots like this in the first place. It seemed like it would have solved so many problems. I looked down in surprise to see both of Anya's girls at my knees, smiling broadly, each tugging on a pants leg. Silence reigned for long moments throughout the gray hall, and I could see that some waited in fear over what I would do next. My temper still preceded me, and in full fairness, most of the public had no chance to see how I'd changed in the last few seasons. Looking down at these beautiful children, however, it never entered my head to scold them. Their trusting smiles were such a balm to this old warrior's soul as the ones I received from Gabrielle.
"We know you,"
the oldest girl said, beaming up at me. I motioned the guard away, who ran up to intervene, and I scooped both girls up into my lap. Poor Dimitri. The look on his face when I told him to continue was priceless. He became so distracted by the girls who squirmed, giggled, and pointed at him that he started to babble. As for myself, I must admit that I was surprised at my own reaction. I remember distinctly how absolutely terrified I was at the prospect of being near these small bundles of delight for the first time. Now there was not only no fear, but I actually paid little attention as one girl tugged gently on strands of my hair, the others playing with the laces of my shirt. All the while, I was listening attentively to Dimitri's monotonous diatribe regarding slavery and Greek law. One of the girls began poking me in the ribs and hit a particularly ticklish spot, causing a burst of laughter from me, which I covered by pretending to clear my throat. I grabbed the offending hands, but now it became a game to the youngster. Quickly realizing that I was beginning to look less than regal in my current state, I brought the morning session to a close. "Free the slaves and send the vessel back to its owners," I interrupted.
"Lord Conqueror, surely you..."
"What part of my command aren't you clear with?" I asked Dimitri, rising from my chair and silently motioning the two girls to stay put. They both quieted instantly and sat obediently in the chair I just vacated.
"But they're slaves, Lord Conqueror, and the ship's owners."
"The question of their slavery appears to be in some dispute," I said abruptly, walking to stand in front of the man. I admit, I always enjoy doing this. I stood nearly a head taller than any man in my court, and occasionally, physical intimidation was the only thing men like this understood. "Free each and every slave and give them 10 talents of silver from palace coffers. Return the ship to its owners and be done with it."
"But, Lord Conqueror, surely the ship's owners deserve some recompense also," Dimitri whined.
I had already turned to go, but I moved back in front of him, to tower over the man and hissed in a low tone. Their compensation is the fact that I'm giving them their ship back and not impounding it. Plus the fact that I'm not dispatching a unit of men to arrest them as illegal slave traders. We are finished. I will hear more petitions this afternoon, I said, turning my back.
I walked back to the girls and quickly scooped them up into my arms, carrying them from the great hall. Their giggles could be heard throughout the halls, and I thoroughly enjoyed the looks of amazement that greeted me. Hello, Atreus. I smiled at my captain's expression of complete surprise as he closed the door to Anya's rooms.
Lord Conker.
He bowed his head, a worried smile crossing his features.
So, you're Gabrielle Tolyu, after all.
Gabrielle? I asked in surprise to cover my young slave. No. Actually, you see, I always wondered why you were the first one there that night I beat the young lieutenant to a pulp. A few things began to add up, and I realized that you would have had to be here for a purpose. It's not like you to wander the halls of the palace for no reason. Then it dawned on me that you certainly may have had a purpose, here in the rooms below my own. I certainly didn't mean to bring dishonor to the Lady Anya, or you, Lord Conqueror, Atreus said stiffly. I could see that he was wondering if he actually were in trouble or not. I pushed myself from the wall that I had been leaning against, slapping the soldier in the back, and I laughed. Come on, my friend. Let's have a drink, shall we? I said, leading Atreus up the stairs to my own study. So, when did all this start? I asked Atreus, pouring the both of us a strong cup of port. Atreus shook his head, and I could sympathize completely with the look. His expression told me that he was wondering the same thing. I went to take Petra there after I showed him around the messengers area that first day. I saw her there, all small and weak, and, well, I don't even know how to explain what I felt. I crossed the room and handed the captain one of the hairy silver goblets, continuing to stand there as I thought about his answer. Yes, I understood his feelings completely. It seems the same affliction struck me down while in the castle in Ambracia, when I stood there, looking at the small slave in her bare feet. I physically shook my head to bring myself to the present. So, dear captain, I began. Seeing as how Anya is leaving here under my protection, I rather consider it my duty to see that her reputation is not sullied. What are your intentions towards the woman? I asked, but when I saw Atreus begin to bristle, I realized he didn't recognize the jest for what it was.
I have done nothing to dishonor the woman, Lord Conqueror,
he said through clenched teeth, rising out of his chair.
Relax, my friend. I laid a hand on one shoulder and pushed him back into his seat.
I was only joking, Atreus. I grinned down at the man. The captain smiled at that, shaking his head back and forth. Finally, a silence between us, and when I looked over at him, he was concentrating his gaze on me.
You have changed so much, Lord Conqueror.
For good or ill, I chuckled in response.
It is good. It is very good.
When I first came to know you, it was your skill as a warrior that drew me to your side. After nearly 20 seasons, I have witnessed your very best and your very worst, yet I have always been willing to die with a sword in my hands for your ideals. I was there in the days when the people called you Lion, and I've always believed in you and the reasons you fought to keep Greece ours. I'm not the man above asking for a little help, and I prayed to Athena on more than one occasion that you would one day return to the ideas of the Lion. It gets to know that God still listened to an old soldier's prayers. He finished, and I turned toward the window to blink away the sudden tears. I am not proud of most of my life, Atreus, I answered. I won't try to tell you that standing before Hades will be easy for you when that time comes. I would like you to know that through it all, you've earned my respect as a warrior. In the last few seasons, I have seen a self-awareness come over you that is welcomed by all. I have always been proud to call you Lord Conqueror, but it has only been recently that I am pleased to also call you my friend. Thank you, Atreus. That title honors me more than any other. I answered, my back still facing him.
Tell me then, friend, I asked, changing the subject. How do you feel about this young woman, Anya?
I suppose I love her.
Atreus responded with some embarrassment. I understood, but who else was I to ask such a thing of? And does she feel the same for you?
I believe so, Lord Conqueror. We've never actually said the words, but, well, you know how it is. You sort of get the feeling.
I wanted to tell Atreus that I didn't know how it was. That's why I was standing here, surely looking like an idiot, asking a soldier about love. The last thing I needed or wanted was to look a fool. I wondered if it was worth it, trying to ascertain what my feelings were for my young slave. There was no way a beautiful young girl was going to fall in love with the conqueror of the known world, was there? Besides, what I was feeling for Gabrielle wasn't love, was it? There would only be one way of finding out. I had to decide whether a relationship with Gabrielle, as ludicrous as that sounds, was worth a little humiliation. I turned around and pulled a small chair in front of the seated man. I turned it around and straddled the seat, resting my arms on the chair's back in front of me. I opened my mouth to speak before I could turn tail and run. Atreus, how do you know?
No, Lord Conqueror?
If what you're feeling, if what she's feeling, I mean, if it's really love. It was too late to back down now. The question was out there already. And so, I looked at him with grim determination, hoping he was smart enough not to make me explain. Finally, the light of understanding burned in his brown eyes, and he nodded his head, a small smile of realization crossing his lips.
I see, he said at last,
the import of the players involved eventually getting through to him. It's not very easy to explain. It's the way I feel when I'm around her. But more than that, the way I feel when she's not by my side. If she's away from me, I worry for her. And when she's with me, I'll worry I'll do something stupid in front of her. It's feeling something like pain waiting all day to see her. And then the minute I'm with her, the pain continues because I know shortly I'll have to leave her. It's knowing that everything she says or does simply fascinates me. It's in the way I have to remind myself to keep breathing when she smiles at me. Most of all, Atreus finally took a breath and I noticed how his eyes took on a gentle expression as he spoke of Anya. It's knowing that I'll probably make a complete jackass out of myself in front of her, but that she won't notice. And if she does, you can rest assured she'll overlook it. I know none of this is very concrete, but the only way I know to say it is that she completes me. Just as he finished speaking the words that were highly uncharacteristic for the battle-hardened soldier, I heard screams followed by peals of laughter coming from outside. Rising and walking to the balcony that overlooked my gardens, I watched as Gabrielle tucked a small lap quilt around Anya's legs, the slightly older woman sitting on one of the stone benches. The young slave then turned and pounced on one of the small girls, lifting her up and twirling her body around and round to giggles of delight from the tiny child. This was the one, the smallest, that always seemed to find me, and yet she did again. Pointing a chubby finger up towards the open balcony, Gabrielle raised her eyes to meet mine. She smiled, and I find myself, just as Atreus predicted, reminding myself to keep breathing. The little girl waved happily at me, and I couldn't help waving a few fingers back, freezing in mid-motion, looking around self-consciously to see who might be watching. I cleared my throat and tried to appear stern once more, but I think the females below understood that it was all bluster. Gabrielle kissed a chubby cheek, and the girl squirmed from her grasp, running off through the maze of stone paths that wound through the beautiful garden. I'm not sure if those flowers ever heard laughter before this, let alone a child's laughter. No one was ever allowed in my private gardens, but since Gabrielle had run of the area, the guards knew better than to deny her and her new friends. Once the small blonde released the laughing girl, Gabrielle lifted her head to look up at me again. With that one glance, everything Atreus just said made complete sense. Is that what this feeling is, little one? Is that why I worry when you're not with me and sit captivated by your innocence and unintentional charm?
Is it true? Am I feeling something that Xena the Conqueror thought was never meant for her? The moment of our eye contact lasted no more than a dozen heartbeats, but it felt like an eternity to me. As I looked down into those eyes, that always seemed to hold something more than the rest of the world saw, I realized the truth of it. Gabrielle, you complete me. By late afternoon, my schedule of petitions for the day was exhausted, as was I. I searched for Gabrielle, and when I couldn't find a trace of her, I asked one of the guards who was stationed on this floor of the palace.
"She's helping in the school, Lord Conqueror," he answered. "I didn't even know we had a school," I responded with some confusion.
"Well, the Lady Delia started it up, Lord Conqueror, and she asked your Gabrielle to assist her." I chuckled aloud at this bit. Gods, that's all I need, for Gabrielle to spend more time around Delia. Figures the two of them would come up with a plan like this. Unsure as to when my young slave would find her way to me, I decided to leave her a note and take Tenori out for a relaxing run. I look back at my actions now and wonder, what if I decided not to leave Gabrielle a note? What would have transpired between us if I hadn't made my way to her rooms, discovering the scroll, lying outside its case on a writing table? I ask myself the same thing over and over some days, for on this day it became official. On this day I lost my heart.
"My name is Gabrielle, and I am a slave, and I belong to Xena the Conqueror."
So the scroll started out, but I was long past that portion now. I was more than halfway through. It was a horrible thing I was doing, destroying my young slave's privacy by reading the scroll. It was rolled up tight, but was lying outside its case, as if waiting to be finished. I wanted to stop. I chided myself and berated myself, yet still, I could not stop reading. It was as if Gabrielle were finally speaking to me. She was telling me her most private and intimate thoughts, and I, like the criminal that I am, gave in to temptation's call.
"What is it about her that causes my many fears to melt away, as the winter's ice under the heat of the midday sun? Why do I feel so much more than a mere slave when in her presence? A more apt question might be, why does she insist on me being more than a slave? Even when I can't see her, I feel her powerful blue gaze upon me, trying to extract my secrets from their hidden resources within my heart. She does not know what it means to be a slave, but I will not say she does not know what fear is. I myself thought of her as the most fearless woman I have ever known of, but on the evening she taught me to stand up for myself, I learned that not only does she know fear, but is often her closest companion. I could not, nor can I still, explain what it did to me that night. She gave me permission to defend myself. Has she saved me or cursed me? She has only called me her slave but once, while I was in her presence. Now she uses the words, 'You belong to me.' I could take this admission as simply my master asserting her ownership, but I feel there is more to it. She asked me if I belonged to her, and I feel that she is asking me so much more than that. Often, when she asks that question, it is with a certain degree of sadness, even trepidation in her voice. She has caused me to do something that I vowed I would never let happen. I promised myself, every heartbeat of every day, for nearly 11 summers, that I would not do this, yet it has happened. The unthinkable has occurred, and I don't know how to undo the damage. Worst of all, I do not know if I want to. She is called Xena the Conqueror, and the name is appropriate, isn't it? She's conquered me, hasn't she? She has breached the barriers I spent half my life creating, and all of the things I swore would never happen, she alone has been able to bring forth. She has caused me to feel. My problem is that I don't know what I feel. Is it friendship? Compassion? Gods? Love? How does one recognize the difference without ever having experienced the emotions before? Pain and humiliation have been my constant companions since I was first placed on the ocean block. What does this woman know of these things? She who has never suffered the degradation of being owned like chattel. I How is it then that she knows just the right thing to say to ease my constant fears? How does she know how to touch me so that I do not simply feel her caress on my skin, rather deep in my soul? I cannot say why or how she knows me so well at times. We are so very different, are we not? There are so many questions and so few answers. I am better educated than over half the population of this castle, yet there are so many things I have yet to experience. I have been instructed well, and my knowledge is vast, yet I have been kept sheltered from so much. Why do I feel entirely safe in her arms? Do I fool myself when I think there may be a bond? Dare I use the word affection growing between us? Does she know the turmoil this causes me? She who seems all-knowing to me? Does this woman know that I wake up in the night to hear her whispering my name in her dreams? Does she realize when she's not looking, I gaze at her and I am amazed at her beauty? Does she understand that hers is the first pleasurable touch I've ever encountered? Last night I pleasured her for the second time, in no way that any man or woman has ever taught me. It was all instinct, and something rather primal I felt locked up deep inside. It was forceful and commanding, and although I know my master's arousal was great, mine was as well. That surprised and frightened me. I touched her this way, not only because it pleased her, but also because it thrilled me. In almost 11 seasons, I have never experienced any form of release from the acts that I performed or were committed upon me. This woman, however, can whisper in my ear, and I can feel warmth swirling in my belly. When she touches me, I am instantly wet and awaiting the contact that always promises that she will not stop until I experience that release. Last night, I was caught up in that pleasure, not only hers, but my own pleasure as well. I straddled her body, my wet center pressed against her muscled abdomen, and suddenly, I felt the rocking in my own hips as they ground into her belly. I was mortified, knowing punishment would be swift, but it never came. Her large hands took hold of my hips, and she actually encouraged my movements. She pulled me down, pressing my knee harder against her skin, my own increasing wetness making it easier to slide myself across the hard muscles covered with silky skin. In my head, I knew that my actions were not those of a slave, and when she began to moan and persuade me with her words, I knew those were not the actions of a master. I leaned forward, bracing my hands on the bed, and continued my body's movements, only focused on my own mounting need. Her sound sent jolts of pleasure through me. Then I felt her hands slide up my body to each enclose a breast. She pinched and pulled on the sensitive tips, causing me to begin to pound myself against her. I had absolutely no control over these actions, and the feelings terrified and gratified at the same time, when I, at last, leaned back, silently screaming in release, I felt those long fingers slip inside me. Before my body could recover, she was producing that sensation again and again. Her voice. Gods, that voice. She sat up and wrapped one arm around me, the other continuing to fill me, repeatedly. She spoke to me in that low, seductive voice, telling me all she would do to me, all she wanted of me. They were sweet, sensual, sometimes vulgar words, but the sound, combined with the idea that she might make them a reality, propelled me over a cliff that I thought I would surely never come back from. All I can think of, as we lay there together, much later, was that these were not the actions of a master and her slave, rather two lovers. One night I woke up, terrified and screaming from a nightmare that I hadn't suffered for many seasons. The large woman took me in her arms and looked genuinely distressed, thinking something she'd done triggered in the unsettling vision. She held me close and whispered tender words until I felt my heart resume its noble cadence. It was at that moment I knew. Again, it is not something I can explain logically, only a feeling that I have. I knew that on this evening, that she would do anything for me, She would go hungry to see that I was fed, suffer any cold to keep me warm. It struck me also that she would feel the sting of a blade before she would ever let harm come to me. The other feelings that I endure is that she doesn't know why she feels the same things. I wonder, however, does she feel it too? Does she know? Yet still, knowing is not understanding. What will come of me if I am wrong?
When I realized I was having trouble reading because of a lack of light, I looked up in alarm at the setting sun. Quickly replacing the scroll on the desk in exactly the same order as I found it, I quietly made my way to my own chambers, all the while my hands nearly shaking in the discoveries I made. If I hadn't been quite so preoccupied with my own thoughts, I might not have missed the small blonde who sat tucked into an alcove on the stone staircase. Nor would I have missed what I was only to discover much later in our relationship. Had I been a small fly on the wall, I could have watched as Gabrielle silently entered her own rooms, lit a candle, and then walked directly to her writing table. A gentle smile graced her features as she lifted the scroll up to the candlelight. Returning the parchment to her desk, she plucked the long golden hair from her own head. Carefully, the young woman wrapped it around the scroll once more. Right before she blew out the candle, a look that seemed the combination of fear, tinged with excited expectation, crossed her face. Taking a determined sigh, the young woman left the room to gently tap on the door across the hall. To be continued.
Well, that concludes Chapter 12 of Tale 1, The Conqueror series by the late L.J. Maas. I hope everyone's enjoying the series so far. If you haven't had a chance yet to go ahead and cast your vote on the theme song, please visit my blog spot, xena-ubers.blogspot.com, and cast your vote for the theme song for the podcast. Hope to have all the votes tallied before the end of the month, and then have a choice made on which one's going to be the theme song. So if you have any suggestions for stories or any suggestions for some movies that can be recommended for other people to see, send me an email at xena.ubers@gmail.com and check out my blog spot. So until the next episode, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.
much better.